My address today offers reflection on the value of socializing, building friendships, forging relationships, and working with others who are older or younger in years than each of us. A sociologist might refer to intergenerational connection and point out the potential advantages of social, emotional, and vocational connection across the generations. Put more simply, I am making the case for the benefits and likely gains of hanging out with those beyond your immediate age group. There is a lot of evidence, both anecdotal and scientific, that we all benefit from being in the company of people who are different ages to us, who are younger than us, who are older than us. We can learn from them, be inspired by them, be frightened by them, derive love and affection from them. And they also from us. It is, of course, a two-way flow of benefit. My thoughts here are prompted by two things that happened to me in the past year. The first will probably appear to you all as an onset of paranoia. However, over the last 5 years, I found I was increasingly finding myself in the company and presence of people that I am now rather inelegantly describing as older people, men with grey hair and sometimes grey beards, women of the same uncertain age. Whenever my wife Rita and I went into a restaurant, such people were also there. When we went to the theatre, such people also followed us there. I was perplexed. But 5 years ago, I formally retired from a wonderful 35 years of teaching and working in a third level institution. There I worked with students and colleagues of all ages from 17 to 70. No particular age group or cohort was preeminent. Not even students, as my work often involved engagement with mature, world-savvy learners. Interaction and communication across all ages in this university environment seemed perfectly natural. On retirement, I had no access to this diversity of age groups. Then, one day last year, as I crossed the threshold of my biblical 70 years and 10, I looked into the mirror and saw that I, just like those older people who had been following me about for the last 5 years, had grey hair and a grey beard. I had not found my tribe, rather they had found me, indeed found me out. And I resolved to be more proactive in connecting and communicating across generations into the future. The second incident prompting my thoughts here this morning fills me with a certain sense of shame. Late last year, I was chatting with someone who's a friend and a teacher to me. She was describing somewhat tetchily how her daughter, who is in her second year at a Dublin university, was shirking some domestic duties and had been reluctant to take up a lucrative part-time local job opportunity. Sounds to me like she is a snowflake, came my mischievous comment. Now, calling someone a snowflake is not nice. Here is how Wikipedia, the free online encyclopedia, defines the word. Snowflake is a 2010s derogatory slang term for a person implying that they have an inflated sense of uniqueness, an unwarranted sense of entitlement, or are overly emotional, easily offended, and unable to deal with opposing opinions. Common usages include the term special snowflake, generation snowflake, and snowflake as a politicized insult. Wow, what had I done? Another old fogey calling out a young millennial as she tries to come to terms with an adult world. My sense of anxiety and shame for my name calling was further compounded a few weeks later when I read a book review by the journalist Fintan O'Toole of Sally Rooney's new novel entitled Beautiful World, Where Are You? O'Toole argues that Rooney is the novelist who speaks for the millennial generation, i.e. those people who are now in their 20s and 30s. I quote, Sally Rooney is regarded, not without reason, as the novelist who best expresses the lives of those born into the Western middle class in the 1990s. They are, like Rooney herself, turning 30. They live in a very 21st century world of precarious unemployment, rampant consumerism, inadequate housing, fluid sexuality, social media saturation, instant celebrity, and the existential dread of climate change. Wow, again. This is some burdens that millennials are carrying. When I was turning 30, employment was indeed precarious, and consumerism was starting to ramp up. But housing was adequate. Sexuality was not yet fluid. The echo chambers of social media did not exist. Celebrity was only a phenomenon to be found in Hollywood. And a climate crisis only affected those who wore sandals in wintertime. And here was I calling a millennial a snowflake. Serendipitously, I met up with this snowflake before Christmas. I found she was attending the same university that I had gone to, was studying broadly the same subjects, was experiencing much the same challenges, disappointments and anxieties that I had experienced in my first years in college. Only I felt this young woman was engaging with them and overcoming them in a way I had not 50 years earlier. Much was learnt in our conversation, including some words of advice that might usefully be passed on to my two grandchildren should they decide to pursue third level education. And I think one of them is down there. And thankfully, with great relief, I also learned that her mother had not related to her my snowflake jibe. So these are the recent entanglements across the chasms of age and generational difference that occasioned the actual title of this address. What age are you? This is not meant in any inquisitorial way, but as an encouragement to you to think about age difference and how a broader age inclusiveness could benefit the way we live our lives. In other words, hanging out with others beyond or outside those who are your immediate age peers or contemporaries. There is compelling scientific evidence to indicate the value of just doing this. In his 2018 book entitled How to Live Forever, The Enduring Power of Connecting the Generations, Mark Friedman, an American psychologist, synthesizes much empirical research to explore the benefits of intergenerational connection. Friedman contends that when younger and older connect, the generational relationships built are a route to positive outcomes in early life and a key to happiness and well-being in an adult's later years. The significant benefits of a caring adult mentor on children's lives have been emphasized in study after study. The adage that all a child needs to flourish is the unconditional love of one adult has been proven. Stable interactions with older people matter in young people's development. But you may ask, what do older adults gain from relationships with young people? Friedman points to the seminal Harvard study of adult development, which began tracking more than 1,000 people 80 years ago and continues to do this to this day. Of the study's findings, one is preeminent. Relationships are the critical ingredient in well-being, particularly as we age. And this connection is facilitated not only by bonds with partners and peers, but also by ties spanning generations. The Harvard study highlights the importance of what psychologists call generativity. Generativity means investing in, caring for, and developing the next generation, intuitively as a way of ensuring the long-term survival of the species. Intergenerational volunteering to promote the well-being of younger generations is an example, and is proven to be good for older people's mental and physical health. Indeed, the Harvard study finds that older adults who do so are 3 times as likely to be happy as those who do not. Friedman concludes in his book, "Today, an accumulating body of research on purpose, generativity, relationships, and face-to-face contact suggests that engagement with others that flows down the generational chain is likely to make you healthier, happier, and probably more long-lived." Rosita Boland is a journalist of many years standing with the Irish Times. She recently wrote a piece entitled, "Age Shouldn't Matter When It Comes to Friendships," in which she celebrates long-standing friendships with 4 people, 2 considerably older and 2 considerably younger than her. She writes warmly of how these friends have enhanced her life over a long period. I quote her, "There is no rule that says our most important friendships all have to be only with those people we happen to meet in school or at college, people of our own age. Of course, I have plenty of other friends who are my own age, own vintage, and those are relationships also to treasure, but for different reasons. But I particularly cherish those friendships with people both older and younger. They have made my life so much richer. So here's to age fluidity in all our friendships." On the face of it, the family as a unit offers a wonderful exemplar of intergenerational connection. A Sunday lunch with three or four generations of a family in attendance, is an image beloved of painters, novelists, musicians, and indeed sociologists. However, it can be argued that the cross-generational dynamic within the family is different from that between the family and the wider municipality. The family at times can be inward-looking, overly hierarchical, and lacking in civic spirit. So by all means, we must celebrate family relationships across the generations, but we must also cross the threshold of the family into the wider arena of work, sport, places of entertainment, schools, churches, all the building blocks of a healthy community and an inclusive society. It is here that the potential value of bonds and ties along the generational chain are usefully nurtured. A final point to be made about connection across the generations alludes to the quality of empathy. The ability to understand another person's perspective is always challenging. The capacity to sympathize with another's experience and anxieties is demanding. There is a need to walk a mile in their shoes, no matter how difficult. And while empathy is always key in establishing and maintaining relationships with our peers and contemporaries, a case can be made that this quality becomes more important across the generations. To conclude, here is a verse from a song that exhibits warm and magical empathy on the part of two Liverpudlians in their late 20s, imagining enduring love into the 60s of their life. You'll be older too, if you say the word, I could stay with you. I could be handy, mending a fence when your lights have gone. You can knit a sweater by the fireside, Sunday mornings go for a ride. Doing the garden, digging the weeds, who could ask for more? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Amen.